You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is the second time I've talked to Gladys McGarry. Last year, she was 102 years old. This year, she's 103 years old. She wrote a book, The Well-Lived Life, a 102-year-old doctor's 6 secrets to health and happiness at every age, and it's coming out in paperback. And every time I read this book, I've read it twice now, and I talk to her, I almost feel like crying, and I don't really know why. It's almost as if she was born with wisdom, but then kept even growing for the next 102 years. Like, she drove a Ford Model A car, and now she's talking to me through, you know, Zoom on the internet and going on podcasts, writing books. She was a doctor her whole life. She's been all over the world, had so many amazing experiences, also has suffered, of course, much loss. I don't think you can live to be that age and not have an incredible amounts of loss that you have to learn to move past and still be positive and still live every day to its fullest, which, I mean, we get on the Zoom with her and she's like, oh, I'm getting over my tricycle accident. She was riding a tricycle and it threw her off into the street and she broke 3 ribs.
Yeah.
And she's now totally healed and on the podcast. And as Jay was saying right afterwards, boy, she's like a wise kung fu master. Well, anyway, I really look up to this woman a lot. Here's Gladys McGarry. We have a great conversation about all sorts of things. And she's the author of The Well-Lived Life.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling fine. I had that accident with a tricycle, broke 3 ribs, but that's 5 weeks ago and I'm all well.
Wait a second. You had an accident with a tricycle, you broke 3 ribs, and of course, any statement like that has to be followed with, and now you're 103 or 104 years old. How old are you?
I'm 103 still.
Okay, I don't want to make you older than you are.
Oh, that's, I won't say, you know, I have to live each moment to get to be 104. So I still am 103.
You know, and so, okay, you've had this tricycle accident. What happened?
Well, I was riding my tricycle and she got stuck in one of the dips in the road and tossed me. She threw me off and I landed on my back and broke 3 ribs. Now I'm punishing her because she's in the back of my porch and I've told her she shouldn't have done that. But anyway, we're writing our story about how she tossed me.
And can I ask, were you scared when you realized you had been hurt?
Well, it hurt. I don't know whether I was scared or not. I guess I was, but you know, those things are frightening. And I didn't know what had happened, but I knew I hurt. And so we got an x-ray and there it was. And the first x-ray said that I had one of the ribs that was not attached. I mean, it was, it had not gotten, it had gotten it detached. But the next x-ray we got, it had found its place and we were back in shape.
And now you're feeling fully recovered or mostly recovered?
It's healed.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, and this is why, look, in your book, The Well-Lived Life, you share these six secrets, which really are more difficult than they sound, a lot of these secrets. And, you know, I read the book a year ago when we first spoke, and I've read the book more recently to prepare for this. And I really find myself kind of in tears when I'm reading it, particularly towards the end, and you're describing, you know, painful experiences that you've been through. And I don't know, this is going to sound weird, but I don't know if I want to live to be your age. Does that sound weird?
No, because I don't know that I want to live, but how long I want to live. It depends on how much I can do to accomplish what needs to be accomplished. I mean, there's life that needs to be lived, people that are reaching for their true humanity. I think all around the world, that's what's happening, because that's what I'm hearing from people. The stories that I'm getting from people are about how they were in a spot where they were feel really, really stuck. And some of the words of that they read or heard or lived helped them to get out of that stuck place and go on with their lives. And so it's that kind of life-giving juice that love carries through from one person to the next.
Well, let me ask you, like, when you were going through your divorce, for instance, with Bill, which happened after 46 years of marriage, did you feel, for instance, loved during those moments?
I was so shattered. I was so broken. I was totally useless. I was in my car. I was screaming at the universe. I was yelling at God. I was saying all kinds of, "Do you want to know? No, don't want to know," and stuff. But I was so broken that I'd gotten to the point where I couldn't go on any further. And I pulled the car over to the side of the road. And I said to myself, am I going to spend the rest of my life this way, feeling this way? And the words came down to me, "This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." It had my name in it. Be glad. Okay, I back up. And I went to my home, which at that point was empty except for the dog. And I changed my license plate. And my license plate read, "Be glad," for the rest of the time I was in Phoenix doing my medical work. And so that every day that I went to my car, I had to see that. And people behind me in the traffic had to see that. So I was carrying the message of "be glad" around for the rest of the time I was in practice here. It was that kind of a moment in time when my total brokenness brought me to my knees enough that I was able to answer that.
Yeah, because you mentioned how people are trying to find their true humanity, and how you say in the book is you were always identifying yourself as Bill's wife and then Bill's divorced wife, and you guys introduce yourself as Doctors Bill and Gladys, and you know, you had to almost recreate, you had to find your true humanity then.
I had to. I then became Dr. Gladys. Up until then, I was Bill and Gladys.
Yeah. And you talk about how it's possible to learn lessons in these moments when it seems like it's impossible to learn from them. Like, you look back over prior times where you had been hurt and what, and you kind of have to, you almost have to make this lawyer-like argument with yourself that, okay, I've had bad moments in the past. I learned from them in the past, which means I can learn from them now, which I think is an interesting and useful technique. But I'm sure when you're actually in the moment when you have to do that, it's very difficult.
Well, it's difficult because you don't know the next step and you have to live it. You know, because the next step was, okay, if this is what you're going to spend the rest of your life doing, face up to it, you know, and it was horrible. I mean, the things I was saying, the things I was doing, my whole life at that point was in tatters. So I had to do something with it. The important thing was just stop long enough to be glad about what it is and then see where you go. And that's what's happened.
And it's, I mean, look, you've lived such an interesting life starting from your parents. Like your parents worked as, you know, doctors in India. You grew up all over the place. You've met so many interesting people and you've been all over the world. I mean, but it's hard to think like you mentioned how you used to drive a Model A Ford and now people are like casually going into space.
Yeah.
Almost like hard to grasp, but I wanted to ask you specific things. Like, you know, you mentioned in the acknowledgments about Edgar Cayce, for instance. So Edgar Cayce is known for, you know, he wrote books about having psychic powers and he was able to predict things. You also met with, you know, so many times with Milton Erickson, who was like the founder of various branches of psychology. I mean, you've had this fascinating adventure, 103-year adventure. And what was Milton Erickson like? Like he created hypnotherapy and he convinced himself, he hypnotized himself into not believing he could be, you know, crippled from polio. I just wanted to ask you specifically, like, what was that like meeting him and seeing him go through this experience?
He was a funny guy. I mean, he was colorblind. His wife had all of his clothes in one color because he was colorblind and he would get the weird colors off. Anyway, he was a very opinionated and amazingly, his opinion used to, they'd stop us in the middle of what we were saying and think, no, what was that he said? You know, it was that kind of a guy. He didn't just say empty things. He said things that stopped us where we were thinking and made us think again. So when when my husband Bill met him at a meeting, a medical meeting, and brought, and they came home and we started these evenings on Tuesday nights of having, there were about five, I was the only woman, but there were about five of us who would come together on a Tuesday night just to talk about stuff that Milton was talking about. But at that point, I was pregnant, and by the time I was 8 months pregnant, they were staying until 2 o'clock in the morning and on this, and I finally kicked them out because I had to get my rest. But it was a good thing because when they left, they had to create something else, and they created the American Hypnosis Association. Anyway, it's that kind of a amazing aspect to life itself. If you have to go through certain things and you actually are able to step and take a step forward, it may seem like the wrong thing to do, but if it's for the right reason, just do it.
Like, what's an example?
Yeah, that kicking them out to start the American Hypnosis Society was the right thing to do. I didn't know it was the right thing to do. I just knew I had to take care of this baby and myself, and so they better take care of themselves. And they did.
And do you think, how do you think he did, like, how does the mind work? Like, how did he basically get himself going again? You know, having polio seems to have permanent physical effects, and yet through the mind, he was able to recover some abilities that he had lost through polio.
Well, he found he found his juice, okay? He found the words that he could say that would allow other people to pay attention to the things he was thinking. And that's what happened with us as a small group. We began to listen to the things that Milton Erickson was saying and thinking, you know, he's right. And how do we put that into context with our lives? And so from that step on, it took the next step, the way life does.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. immediately after you post your job. ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. You know, sometimes I would like to believe these things and kind of use the enormous power of the mind to help my life and to move it forward. But there's so much baggage in there, at least telling me that it's just not going to work, that I don't have that kind of power over reality to, you know, people always say you view the world just from your perspective only, and it's only your perspective that you see the outside world. But there is, I also sort of feel like there's this reality too. We all kind of share this reality and world, and sometimes things are bad and sometimes things are good, but I can't have any control over that.
Well, let me tell you a story, okay? Because my life goes on a story about another James. I had a friend named James McCready, and he was a family friend. We all loved James. And then he moved into dementia. So we had to put him into a facility where he'd be taken care of. And so he had his room, and it was a nice room and all of that. I went to visit him one day and took him a little plant, a little green plant in a little pot. And when I took it to him, I said, "Now, James, this is your plant, but it needs to be loved and it needs to be taken care of." Now, he's looking all around the world, you know, and he didn't respond, so that I thought he was even understanding what I was saying, but I was saying it anyway. And I said, "It's going to need water and it's going to need sunshine, but it's your plant to love and take care of." And I talked to him about a little bit about this. And I put the plant on his windowsill and I left. And a week later, I came back and he met me at the door because he knew that I was coming up. And he met me at the door and he said, "Magic, magic, magic." And I said, "What, what?" And he said, "Come, magic." And we went into his room and he says, "Box." And he took me over to the air conditioning box on the wall. And he says, "Look, push this button. Everything is cool and nice. And plant loves it." But he says, "Push this button. Oh, everything hot, awful. Plant doesn't like it." That's what he told me. And I realized that he, in his state of whatever you want to call it, being alive, had taken the message and had put it into action and created a relationship, a loving relationship with the plant, in a way that was giving him juice. Is that amazing kind of ability that we each have to reach to some other living thing? Now, that little plant wasn't anything to speak of. I mean, I just took a little green plant to him. And he took that and was able to create a story for himself that allowed him to get some juice back in his life because he connected with another living thing. So who are we to say what is the process of reaching to other people and reaching to other aspects of our lives around the world? Because all of the living stuff in this world is here, and it's life and it's love that keep it going.
And when towards the end of the book, when you talk about this, the sixth secret, which is how spending your energy, I'm recalling the name of the
juice.
Spend your energy wildly.
Juice.
Yeah. So what does that actually mean, the word wildly there?
Well, like with me taking a plant to that. I mean, what sense does that make? When I took my plant to that little plant to James, it made no sense at all.
Sorry.
Well, how is this man who knows nothing from anything going to... It was a juicy, stupid thing to do. But look what it did.
Yeah, and why did you get the inclination to do it?
Because I had the juice to do it, and I did it. You know, in other words, I thought about it, and I thought, well, yeah, James might like that. It was just a passing thought, and so I did it. It was that kind of thing that, I mean, wildly. What kind of a wild thought is that? You take a little green plant to James. You know, so... But it doesn't just end up so, because the plant was a living thing. James was a living thing. The refrigeration was energy that was a living process. In other words, he connected his living process with the living process of the plant enough to love the plant enough to create this story. That's what stories are all about. Telling each other and allowing each other to understand what life is about.
What strikes me too is that, okay, you could visit your friend Jim because on the one hand, maybe there's a sense of obligation. Oh, he's in this facility and you want to stop by, check in on him and see, but you infused more into this visit. You kind of, like you said, you kind of almost created a story out of it. Like you did this ridiculous thing, but that's what stands out and creates a story that we could tell today, many years later.
Right, right.
And so,
if you can put some life into actions that you're taking and doing, then you're spending your juice wildly.
Mm.
Who cares, you know? When you throw it all, the whole idea into the air, well, who cares that you took a little plant to James? Nobody cared. Nobody else cared. James and I are the only two that did. And so what, you know? Well, I cared and he cared, so we connected and the plant was there. A living process is that ability to accept life at its own terms. Now, having dementia is not a pretty thing. So this wonderful man had shifted into dementia, but he was still the same man who I knew and who, as a family, we cared about. He used to spend a lot of time with our family, with our kids and so on. But then he wasn't able to. He had shifted into this phase of his life. And he was still alive. And as long as there was life there, I cared about him.
And how old was he when he suffered from dementia? or when he started suffering from it?
Oh, probably in his 60s.
When you were younger, what did you think was old?
20. I remember saying to my cousin, who had a brother who was 20 years old and I was 10, and I said to her, "How does it feel to have a brother that's 20 years old?" I remember that, because 20, oh my goodness, I'm 10. How can he be 20?
Yeah, and I was thinking this when I was reading your story, how you went to Afghanistan when I think you were 86 years old.
Right.
And so that's almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
Like, but 86 is also old.
Oh, yeah.
And yet you had confidence to kind of take these adventures. It seems like you were always open to adventure. You said yes to adventure a lot.
Well, my parents did. They went to India in the middle of World War I to take their message of love to the Indian people in the jungles. Okay, you started, and my mother went into labor with me at the Taj Mahal. You start your journey with parents like that, it's not an empty journey. Nobody's life is an empty journey.
But what if you don't start with parents like that? Like, that sounds amazing.
Well, take what you've got. What do you have? You know, you have, maybe it's an empty plant, you know, something that's like that empty plant, who cares? It's something that's alive. Maybe it's a dog that you have in your life that's alive. Maybe it's a tree. Maybe you have a tree that's a friend. Maybe you have a friend that you don't like very much, but he's your friend and you play with him, or whatever is going on in your life. It's that fact that life creates life, and love creates life. And love and life go together like a pregnancy. A pregnancy is a manifestation of the life force within the mother and the baby that are one for 9 months or however, and then they become two. You know, the love of the mother creates the life of the baby. The life of the baby takes its first breath. When the life of the baby takes its first breath, that baby becomes a different soul, different person. But until at that time, it's one with the mother. It's that kind of a amazing universe that we live in.
Do you think it's true, the saying that you're only as happy as your saddest child?
As what?
You can only be as happy as your saddest child.
Well, however you want to say that, you know, I think we each have to find our own way of saying that kind of thing that allows us to accept what the status that we're in, you know, whatever it is. Then let's accept it the way it is and see where we're going with that. See what's building, what's around us, what is there out there I can love, okay? You know, or in here that I can love, or what happened yesterday, that kind of a thing.
Do you think as, like, at what point, you know, through the past century, did you ever think, oh, I need to slow down now, it's too much, I need to just slow down?
I never had a chance. I mean, I never thought about slowing down. It was something, because there is always something interesting popping up.
Yeah, like going to Afghanistan in your 80s, for instance.
I had this brother who was Carl Taylor, who started future generations, which is still going by his son, is carrying on the work of future generations around the world, which has created communities around the world who are doing the kind of thing that we did in Afghanistan with the women. But you see, my parents started that. They lived their life wildly and took a chance during World War II. There were U-boats in the water when they went to India. But they went because they had a vision. They had a thought. They had something that was offered to them as the possibility for their life, and it excited them. It gave them juice, and they went to India. All right. My mother went into labor with me at the Taj Mahal. She almost died. I almost died. I had a hepatitis, malarial hepatitis when I was 2. I almost died. I didn't die. I lived through that, and so on, and so on, and so on. And it's that amazing process that love and life create and keep love going and life going. It's how you and I connected. I'm talking to you. Your name is James. I'm connecting you with my friend James, who the story of James and the little plant is now a story that can be, you know, I mean, this is the way love and life goes.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned earlier people trying to find their true humanity. Do you think it's different now than it was, let's say, 30, 40, 60 years ago, that people get lost in the roles they play in society so that it's harder for them to find their true humanity? Do you think it's different now than it used to be?
I think it's different because life is different and life changes, but that doesn't make it's any harder or any easier. It is what it is. And it's as hard as it's going to get. And as long as we take the next steps, as hard as they are, to move to the next step, which makes it as hard as they are, which takes the next step a little easier, then you know, I mean, it's being willing to step forward and in the faith that life and love in your life, in our life, in my life, life and love are the two activating factors that keep me moving and keep us moving, keep the world moving, keep little plants moving.
And so let's say someone is asking you, like, well, I'm so busy all day. I'm doing things, you know, this, that, the other thing. And I want to find my true humanity. Like, what's the advice you give?
Start looking for it. If you're not looking for it, you're not going to see it. Mm. If you're looking for it, you'll find it. And no one else can tell you. I mean, you're in charge of your life. See, I have this idea. This isn't a theology. This is an idea. I have the idea that when God, whatever God is to each one of us, when God created the earth and the universe, and he looked at it, and she, and said, oh, this is gorgeous. This is just perfect. Everything's right here. So now I'm going to create the human being. And in creating the human being, he said to the human, now, everything is perfect. Everything in the universe is perfect. It's in the right place, doing the right thing. It's perfect. I now create you as the only being on this earth which has free choice and free will. So I now give you dominion over the earth. And we, in our arrogance, thought he said domination. And so we said, oh boy, we got it, you know. And we've been going at it. And we've been really not nice to Mother Earth. And it's about time, I think, that we reclaimed our position as being in not in dominance of the Earth, but in dominion, you know, that we have the opportunity to help Mother Earth. And I think that's what we're doing when we start reaching for our true humanity. Because I think our true humanity is like James reaching for that plant, that ability to see in the humblest of things, in the most difficult of circumstances, something that gives us life.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You have this discussion in the book. It's a discussion that you have with Bill about, you know, you were saying everything's wonderful. And he basically said, come on, everything's not wonderful. Why are you always saying that? And, you know, there's this concept of, as you put it, toxic positivity, that maybe being too positive puts blinders on.
Yeah.
You have a good response to that.
Yeah. The Pollyannas idea. Yeah. Well, I still like that better than not.
I guess because there's no benefit to pessimism, but let's say someone, hypothetically, let's say someone's going broke and they're scared. They don't know how to deal with their fear, or let's say their health is going, they're just afraid, or let's say a relationship is falling apart and they're scared it will fall apart. Sometimes it's hard to be optimistic in reality.
Is there any one of us who hasn't been in that place? Have any one of us not had a spot in our lives when we've thought nothing is worth it? Or what in the world am I doing here? I mean, this kind of thoughts come to us and we get into positions where we're stuck. All of us have had that kind of... I don't think anybody has had an easy life. There are always times which all of us have, because we're human beings and we're living this life and we're choosing to look for what we're looking for. And if it's pain and suffering and we're stuck with pain and suffering, we have a choice whether it's going to be like I finally found out when I had to stop my car and stop my screaming and look at it and say, am I going to spend the rest of my life like this? I mean, it was a nasty scene. So when we catch ourselves at that point and look at ourselves, we have a choice to make. And it's our choice. But we have to be able to look for something else. Because if we're not looking for it, we'll never see it.
I guess that's true. I guess sometimes you can be so swept up in your own issues, it's hard to go looking for something else. Like sometimes I don't even really know what that means. Like, of course I could look for something else, but I've got to deal with my own, I got to deal with this issue first.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's sometimes if you just begin to ask the questions, the answers will come. But if you're not asking that question, if you're just thinking, well, this is where life is and I'm stuck here and I'm going to continue like this, life sucks or whatever, you go on and you're continuing suffering. You know, it's like having a bag over your shoulder and you keep looking back at that bag of stuff that you carried, and it's a nasty thing. And finally, you get to the point where you can't turn your neck back again because you've got a stiff neck. It's been looking that way all the time. You know, if you begin to turn your neck back, it's like Milton Erickson, you know? He began after his polio and all the other stuff that went wrong in his life, he began turning his neck back and he thought, there are other ways of looking at things. There are other things. I don't have to keep looking at that trash or whatever.
And it was so powerful for him that it really changed his life.
Absolutely.
I wonder how, though, you generate that power, that force of will.
It did it for me. It's by choice. It's by choosing. I had to stay in my car screaming at the universe about how life was so awful, or turn around and try to find the stuff that I could be glad about.
So then you went home that day and you go into your house, and like you said, it was empty and still Bill wasn't there. Like, still there's the reality that your life had changed.
Yeah.
And it's still knocking on your door. That bag is still there.
It's still there.
But I'm just trying to understand like what you went through that moment.
Well, the only person there was the dog. So I talked to the dog and we had our conversation and I said, well, I've got to get a license plate different from this. So I don't remember what my license plate said, but I took it off and then I wrote the application for a new license. And I went and I got a new license plate that said, be glad. But I started the process of getting a new license.
And so you took action, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can't, it's home. What I'm wondering is, it's probably hard to think your way out of bad thoughts, but maybe taking action kind of cemented the newer thoughts.
Well, that's what is the trick to it. That's the key. Because life and love have to move. If they're stuck, they can't move. You know, it's that process of life activating love activating life. I mean, because life is like a seed in the pyramid. It's there, the shell's around it, it can't do anything until love in the form of water and air enters and softens the shell so that the shell can pop open. And life can move. It's like a woman being pregnant. The process of having a birth, a healthy birth, or a viable birth, is allowing that baby in its own time to come and take its own first breath. And that first breath then allows it to become itself. You name it. That's the point of naming the baby.
So do you think like every moment, every day, you're essentially, as you say, combining life and love and giving birth, in a sense, to the new day? Like,
absolutely. Absolutely. Every time, you know, every thought that you think and I think is giving us a chance to express some thoughts that are going on in our heads that we can share with each other and with ourselves. You know, if you don't ask a question and I don't think about it, it never gets answered.
And so I wonder, like, sometimes this is going to sound ridiculous, but sometimes, particularly lately, I feel like I'm getting old.
So you are.
And
if 20 is old, you're old.
Well, I'm in my 50s. So
you're young.
I know. It sounds ridiculous, you know, me saying this to you, but I think, oh, this must mean my memory is worse, or maybe this means I don't have as much energy, because things do change physically and mentally.
But what are you looking for?
I guess I want to be mentally as sharp as I was when I was younger, when I was 20.
All right. Look for it. And you're, why are you asking these questions?
That's a good question. I guess because I'm hoping you know the answer. or maybe I'm hoping you'll convince me not to be thinking about this, that it's pointless to think about this.
Well, do you think it's pointless?
I don't know.
All right. You did it. You don't know, so you gotta find out.
Yeah, and I guess I don't know how to find that out.
You do?
I don't know where to look.
You're looking.
Yeah, that's true. I'm looking.
Yeah. See, now, if you hadn't asked those questions of yourself, where would the questions be? You know, I mean, what good were they?
Yeah.
They just rumble on. But you asked those questions. And so what? You know, you'll find the answers. That's what.
Right. I'll find some answer.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it reminds me of one time I had this friend who, and I've had a couple of friends in this exact same situation. They start a company, they work really, really hard, they're stressed and anxious and scared, and finally they get to the other side, they sell the company, they feel they've met all of their goals, and so the stress like sheds off them, and then a week later, and this has happened to several friends, not just one, they have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Like it's almost as if they're not moving forward anymore, even though the way they were moving forward previously was in this negative way, like stressful and anxious and fearful. Yeah. Once they stopped moving, they had a problem.
Yeah.
Even though they were moving in this negative way, maybe it would have been better if they hadn't been so stressed. It was as if they were postponing like this heart attack just by moving and pushing.
Or creating it.
Yeah, maybe the stress was creating it.
Absolutely. You know, if they had been living that and thinking, oh, you know, maybe this is too hard, or maybe this, I need to change, or, you know, if they were questioning what it was that they were doing, they may drop some of the stuff that they were doing that was not that important, because when they died, they had to drop it.
Yeah. And I guess what you're saying is also no change is too little. So for instance, you couldn't change the circumstances about Bill, or no. If you have a sibling die or your daughter who passed away, like you couldn't change the circumstances, but you could do some change.
Yep.
So like people always say the worst thing ever is to have a child pass away, because that doesn't seem like the natural order of things. But you know, you've experienced so much and you've seen so much that, you know, you've unfortunately gone through this experience.
And at that time, it was the worst thing that could have happened to me.
And like with that, how did you make the decision for yourself even that, okay, I'm going to move forward. And what was the motion you took?
Well, I had other things to do. I had other children to love. She had a son. I had a son that I could love. You know, if I had identified the things that I still had to live for, I consciously didn't, but I knew that I could not let myself die because there were too many things that I loved that I had to live for. So it was not, she was such an important part of my life at that time. I mean, Annalia was just, she was the kind of person, when she walked in the door, everybody knew who she was. Mm. She was that kind of a force. And so to let her go was a really, really painful, hard thing to do. But, you know, I had other things to do too. And I had other children to love. And I had other ways to create and carry on the essence of who and what she was. Because I'll never, ever forget who she was and how she affected me and my life and the stories I have to tell about her and all of this. It's all still part of my memory lane, of the things that I choose to remember and keep her alive. Because she's still alive in my life. She's right up there. Her picture's right up there above this computer.
And do you ever, you know, you've had so many of these experiences, so many different periods in your life. Do you ever lose some of the memories? Like, do things slip away?
All the time. I can't begin to... Well, no, I'm not going to say that. There are so many things that I can't pull out and look at right now because I've got other things that I'm working on. And so I have to deal with what's there. The little plant that's there, I have to take care of.
So you're saying sometimes it's okay that some memory, like what matters the most is what you're dealing with right now.
Right, right. Like, take Milton Erickson, you know, he couldn't continue to bemoan the fact that he couldn't do the thing that he could do before. He had to find something that he could do that would take his mind to a place where he could work with something that stretched his mind. It's that life and love need to be pulled, need to be worked towards, need to be activated. It's why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I do enjoy this and feel that it helps to spread a good message. So I like doing this show for that reason.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a lot, I like to talk about my five L's. The first two are life and love. They don't exist without the other. Third one is laughter. Laughter without love is cruel. It's painful. Breaks families apart. It causes wars. But laughter with love is happiness. And joy. It's why you're doing what you're doing. The fourth one is drudgery. If you're just doing the stuff that you're doing without love, you drag yourself through it. Just what you were talking about earlier, people who die because they do the things that are just in essence killing them. They drag themselves through it, but they do it because they do it, and they die. All right, well, if you put love into the picture, you do what you're doing now, which is your bliss. It's what makes you sing. It makes you want to sing and be, you know. So the drudgery then becomes not drudgery. It becomes what you actually, the juice that keeps you going. And the fifth one is listening. Listening without love is empty sound. You know, it's a clanging gong. It's an empty cymbal. It's that sound that just doesn't mean anything. But listening with love is understanding. So if we can put love into the actions that we take each day and activate that aspect of ourselves with love, it transforms it.
You know, it reminds me of like Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning,
yes.
Where he's at Auschwitz. So you would think, well, how can he be positive at all there? Like, that's
right.
the most, on a scale of 0 to 10, it's like the -1 in terms of
right.
The worst. And yet he would find, you know, meaning in being there. And that's what kept him going.
Right, right. You know, it's a basic truth that life and love activate each other. And it's an ongoing process, and we all have access to it. We just have to choose.
Do you think you knew this all along, in part because it sounds like this is how your parents lived also, or do you think this is something you kind of learned through time?
Well, I think I knew it all along, but it had to grow in me. You know, it wasn't something that I knew it in its fullness, any more than I know everything in its fullness right now. It's a growing process. I love what I'm doing now, okay? I love that I'm able to work with you and talk to you. You know, this is really nice. And so as long as I'm doing the things that make me understand the reality of what I'm listening to, you know, and put things into context with my five L's, you know, that works really nice.
Yeah, and I like the idea of thinking about laughter in the context of love, because you're right, it makes a difference whether there's love or not there.
Yeah, yeah.
And let me ask you, why do you mention it in the acknowledgments, Edgar Cayce? How did he affect your life?
We were, when we came to Phoenix, we had left Wellsville, this town where we'd been practicing. It had almost killed me. I had worked so hard, been so sick and all of that. But we lived for 9 years and we came here and we found Edgar Cayce. We found the philosophy that allowed us to have something else to look for in the way we were working our lives, and something else to reach for is what I'm trying to say. And as we began to understand what Cayce was talking about, you know, pay attention to your dreams, pay attention to what you think you think, pay attention to who you really are. And other statements that made us realize that there was more to life than what we had been looking for. And we began searching. And when you begin searching, let me tell you, things start to show up.
Yeah, I believe that. I think sometimes I get bogged down in the minutiae of life. Like, okay, you have to go on these trips, you have to pay these taxes, you have to do this, you have to do that. It's easy to get off the spiritual quest.
Right.
But it's important, but I do think the best moments of my life were when I was on those quests.
Yeah. Well, and when you were paying attention to your dreams and to the things that were showing up in your life. When you know what it is to also, it's recognizing what's showing up in your life. It's not just the stuff that shows up, but recognizing what really shows up in your life. You know, what you turned a corner and there it was. Huh? You know, we moved to Phoenix and there it was. Rachel Carson had just written her book about a silent spring, talking about diet. And we had lived it all this time, just taking care of life the way it was, not paying attention to the nuances of the diet that we were feeding ourselves and the kids.
Yeah, and so did you switch your diet?
Oh yeah, my daughter wrote a book called Born to Heal, and in it she talks about the time that I made a casserole out of brains for the kids because I was pregnant with Helene and my great Rachel Carson was talking about the pregnant women should eat brains, you know. And I thought, oh, well, okay.
Well, I guess there's that saying, you are what you eat, so.
Oh, absolutely. But we hadn't thought about that. See, that was a new thought to us. We came to Phoenix. And with that came a whole bunch of new thoughts that Casey was talking about. Paying attention to your dreams, paying attention to who's in your life, paying attention to life.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
I guess maybe one gift age brings is that you have enough experience to be able to recognize, to be able to pay attention.
Right.
Like I was talking to someone earlier today who had to fire an employee, and he realized this, he was questioning his decision-making because just a few weeks earlier he had hired this employee, but then it turned out this employee was very rude to the other employees and didn't get along with people. And so he was trying to figure out what in his decision-making process was wrong. But he's much younger than me. And I said, look, it doesn't matter because now you know. And
yeah,
you won't do it again. Like he just hadn't had the experience of having hired someone like that before. And
yeah.
So I think one gift that getting a little older gives one is that you recognize many more things.
Right.
You see many more things in the daily minutia.
You've asked questions that have been answered.
Yeah. And so now, well, look, now what's your next big adventure?
Well, I'll have another podcast to do tomorrow. And, you know, I mean, this is pretty interesting.
This is kind of a dumb question, but what technology in the past 100 years has impressed you the most?
Life.
But that's a technology that doesn't change. Other technologies change.
Life.
I guess it's true.
Life with love. You know, if anything that is activated with love impresses me. And it's what I'm looking for. That's why it impresses me. If I'm doing something and the person that is reaching to me with even a minutia of love with that aspect, if I can feel that reach of, now I'm just making this up right now because it's coming to me, that if I can feel that reach from that person who is looking for something, who is reaching for that answer, then I love that. And I'll jump towards it and I'll go for it because it's something that says, yeah, that's right. Like the questions that you're asking.
Well, and I have to say, like, I mean, I've thought a lot about a lot of things since we did the interview when the hardcover of your book came out. And I would say I've had, you know, an interesting year with some success and some failures, like most years go. And I've been trying really hard to keep my perspective positive. But I feel like I've been in general more negative for some reason. And there's no even real specific reason. Like, nothing bad is happening. It's just, I think I have a little bit more negative self-talk lately. And I've been really trying to reverse that.
Well, there you go. You know, you're working with it.
Yeah.
You recognized it. You've identified it. And now you can do something about it. You can make your choices.
I guess that's the hard part, is really believing that I can make the choices. Like, I hear what you're saying, and I've even said the same thing that you're saying. And somehow it's just, I feel less powerful to make those choices for some reason.
But sometimes when you hear yourself say it, you have to stop and think about it.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you actually thought about it, put it into words, put it into your own hearing process, that you heard your own words, made you think about it again, and here you are talking about it. That's a pretty important thing.
Yeah, I guess that's right, because it's like an archaeological dig. It forces you to go a little bit deeper than you did the day before.
Or you're introduced to an idea. Like when we came to Phoenix, we were introduced to Edgar Cayce, and all of a sudden, whoa, what's this stuff? You know? And it was so interesting, and it has taken us down many, many interesting paths.
Yeah, I've only heard about him. I've never read anything by him.
The first book we read about Edgar Cayce was There is a River. It's his biography. And that in itself is fascinating. But that's what captivated us.
All right, I'm gonna read that. That's gonna be next on my reading list.
All right.
So, but Gladys, once again, you know, it's always such a pleasure even meeting someone like you with such presence and such life experience and such joy for life. And I could see that, you know, writing The Well-Lived Life and reading about, you know, I'll just read the subtitle, 102-Year-Old Doctor's Six Secrets to Health and Happiness at Every Age, reading through each chapter and the practice you give, like the exercises you give, really made me think a lot about my own life. Like when you talk about community, for instance, I don't know if I have as much community now. And maybe that's part of the issue, is I think community is harder to get in some ways now.
Wait a minute. You've got a community. I'm part of your community. You've created this community.
That's true. That is very true, actually.
All right. Recognize what you've already done. And then build on that. Or however you want to. But I mean, really, think of what you've done. It's not empty sound. People are listening to what you're saying.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
food for thought, as like you keep me thinking, and you have for the past year, and I'm so glad I reread your book in preparation for this. I'm so glad I did, because I saw completely different things in it this time also than the last time. And so,
and the paperback's coming out.
Yeah, when does the paperback come out?
What's the date, John?
April 2.
Well, again, Gladys McGarry and author of The Well-Lived Life, and you have a well-lived life, 103 years old. I'm sorry I even thought to say earlier that you might be 104, because I don't want you to feel old or anything. And thank you so much for, again, coming back on the show and answering my questions and telling me your stories. It's always beautiful to talk to you.
Thank you, James.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.